if you would acknowledge your participation in CFAS, and that was sent out to everybody, got comments revised, and I think Jill is trying to get it up on the web page today, but I'm not sure if she has success in that, but hopefully within a week that acknowledgement will be there, and if you can use that, that would be appreciated.
It'll be up within the hour. I just got an email from Ian.
There was a request to have more information on the dysmorphology core put up on the website, and that's been done. So the papyral fissure chart is there now. We had some good news that Kathy Sulik was like in the first percentile on her challenge grant. And has anyone else heard anything on any of their ARRA money funding? One way or another, positive, negative? Mine was negative.
Is this for the stimulus stuff, you mean?
Yeah.
No.
Has anyone gotten any reviews back or scores back or anything?
Well, I got something on the R21 that went out, which was positive so far as I know.
Good or bad?
Hmm?
Was it good or bad?
It was good so far. It's not funded yet, but...
Okay. Well, as long as you got a fundable score, that's good. Okay. Charlie Goodlett is working on that special issue. We have six papers in there, and he is requesting that everyone get him any revisions by August 20th. On the basic science conference call, Michael and I discussed that the ISPRA meeting is going to be in Paris in September in 2010, and it would be very nice if CFAS was represented at that meeting. And Michael and I are going to discuss putting in either one or perhaps two symposia. We may not do it because we're both on the program committee and we don't want to have an appearance of a conflict. But hopefully this weekend I will be able to get some ideas together and email them to Michael and get his feedback and then go from there.
Ed, what meeting is this? You're breaking up.
Oh, it's the ISPRA meeting, the International Society for Biomedical Research on Alcoholism.
Oh.
And it's going to be in Paris. It's September, I think around September 10th. It's a very good meeting usually. You know, it meets with RSA every sixth year, and it meets every other year, once in Europe and once in Asia. So the last one, I guess, was a joint meeting with RSA, and before that it was Australia, and now the next one's going to be in Paris. There are some travel funds available to go to that meeting, typically for senior investigators. Airfare is paid, airfare and registration. For young investigators, they also help pay for some of the hotel. So all your expenses are not covered, but a fair amount of them are. So if people are interested in partaking in a symposium, please let me know and try to put something together and get it in and get it accepted.
Assuming you mean September 2010.
Yes.
Okay.
Meetings in September 2010.
Yeah.
But the abstracts are going to be, or the symposium are going to be due early in the new year. And the sooner you get them in, the higher the likelihood of getting them accepted.
Well, if you could work imaging in there, I'd, you know, consider it.
Well, if you're interested, let me know. And just email me and, you know, tell me what you'd like to talk on and, we'll go from there. And symposium have to include people, international representation. So you do best if you kind of suggest other people who might be able to coordinator where whose research might fit in with yours as well. So put in a reasonable thing. But it has to have an internet. The symposium has to have an international flair. If you have presenters from Europe, that's great too. So, but if, so if you're interested, just drop me an email. Elizabeth, Sal, I guess you were having some upload issues. Have they been resolved?
Yeah, we've been working with Helen and Ben, and I think at this point all of our issues have been resolved. We're working with the new input tool, and now we're just trying to get all of the data into the input tool so that we can upload it to the database.
Okay. Claire, I think there were some issues about the timeline last time, and I think Sarah sent you the way that it's done here in San Diego. Did you get that?
Yes, I think we did, but actually I probably didn't get it. Julie did, and she's not on, so I didn't realize I'm in Seattle. I didn't realize we'd be talking about it today, so I didn't really pay attention. I think it's resolved. We're not having any problem entering data. It's just we're trying not to upload it till we had a full, all of the items that go into a particular subject, and so that's just a lot of stuff. So if you would like it more piecemeal, we can do that.
Andy, how does that work for you?
Well, I don't think it affects us at all. It will affect them if they send in data in multiple chunks, then they've got a little bit more work to do to say, yes, we really do want to upload this data.
Yeah, we were trying to avoid that, which is why we hadn't uploaded it.
Avoid it, because you're on target. I mean, I'm looking at the graphs that were sent out to everybody, and Atlanta's on target. So as long as you stay above the line, then we'll be okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any problem with that.
Right. Sarah's not here about the questions or the three questions, so I don't know anything about that. I'm getting the updates from the Informatics Corps. I know I got the end of the month one. I think I was sent one prior to that, and so I'm pleased knowing that, however, no data has been added or was added for the month of July as of last week. Now, that may have changed by the end of the month. Bill, do you know anything about that? Has more data come in?
Yeah, we've all turned our data in for August.
Okay. That's Phil?
Yeah.
Okay. Is Wendy there?
No, she's testing.
Okay, good, good. Love to see that. All right, so the data I do have are as of 8/1. And I guess things are going along, and I'll keep getting those weekly reports from the informatics about what's getting uploaded. Andy, you wanted this item on the agenda about the informatics core priorities?
Yeah, I'm going to let Michelle talk about that.
Okay. What we're trying to do here is pretty much prioritize a list of things that we need to work on until the end of the year. And what we're trying to find out from everybody is if you guys can send us, like, email, pretty much detailing, like, what your needs are, when you need them, and also if you can indicate somebody that we can use as a point of contact in case you have, like, questions or we can, like, somebody can work with to meet those needs. It would really help us plan our schedule for the end of the year. And also be very, very helpful if you guys can send us an email, like, in the next week or so.
All right.
So that's pretty much what we're looking for.
So, Jill, can you send out an email to everybody saying that the Informatics Corps is trying to prioritize things to complete the end of the year or to start working on by the end of the year? And if people have specific needs for their individual projects, that they convey that to Michelle? And
I got it.
Detail if possible. All right. So
That's pretty much what I have.
All righty. And everyone got the copies of the progress that's being made in the neurobehavioral, the imaging, and the facial imaging project?
Yep.
I think I did.
All right. And, you know, some sites are doing really well. Other sites are starting to get going. And Phil, Tatiana's on vacation because I wanted to try to clarify that whether or not you're getting a camera. And I don't know if Leah has any other information. You were in the original to get a camera for South Africa.
Yeah, and I forgot to send that email to Hadrian and Colleen. Let me write that down. I'll get that done this afternoon.
Okay. Because I think they were planning on sending a camera from one of the sites, one of the newer cameras, and having it in South Africa.
Do you know when you would need it there, Phil?
Well, what we talked about in January, and this is what I have to confirm with this email, is that they would do a 3D picture whenever they brought one of the 120 or so kids in to do the neuroimaging.
So you would need one there for a while, not just someone coming in, image a bunch of kids all at once, and then leaving.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
With the camera to stay.
And there'll be one or two a week, and that's it.
And when will you start seeing them?
Well, they should be commencing real soon here.
Well, no, we got word from Tanya that they've already scanned 7 kids, and they have 2 more scheduled in August, so they're already doing it.
Okay.
Have you seen any of those images?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, we have to do it by mail because to get, connections between South Africa and here wouldn't work. So she mailed a package with CDs or DVDs or something, and it ended up in Nigeria. So
about neuroimaging or facial imaging right now?
I think it was well, they started neuroimaging. The data she sent, I believe, was the MRI data. But it got delayed. So we're going to look at it as soon as we get it.
That is so eerie. That's exactly what happened to my University of Minnesota Medical School application.
It ended up in
I got a lovely letter back from the head of some little private school.
In Nigeria?
In Nigeria.
Medical school in Nigeria, Michael?
I chose not to go. They didn't accept me either.
Affirmative action.
I know. Well, it turned out to be futile because the University of Minnesota didn't take out of state people. I didn't know any better in those days.
Well, there's more. So it got stuck in customs in Nigeria, no less. But I guess it got returned back to South Africa, and they're going to mail it back. But
Elizabeth, can you find out from Colleen whether or not that true high-speed internet services exist in South Africa?
You know, Catherine, when she's been there a couple times, and also her husband, Roger Woods, who's a serious genius when it comes to computer stuff like that, thought that it really things were not set up to be able to do that.
Well,
but I just think that their connections are like 100 megabytes or something, and we use a gigabyte.
I was just wondering if it's a matter of cost or whether it's a matter of availability.
I'll find out. I thought it was availability, but...
Well, it's probably... There probably are places where you do have true high-speed internet, but I can guarantee you that the University of Cape Town and the University of Stellenbosch aren't in that category. Their systems really are quite slow. But
that was the conclusions that Catherine and Colleen and Roger came to when they were there. So,
for general availability, that they use relatively slow capacity because they have a lot of people. But
yeah.
if there's a way to pay additionally for more high-speed access, You know, it's kind of like at home, you can get basic internet for $19, or you can get the really high speed stuff for $50.
Right, and I that's what I'm saying. I'm sure that places like that exist.
In the university.
The universities either reserve that capacity for a few isolated units, or they don't have it at all, and you'd have to go to a private vendor, but that shouldn't be a big problem.
Well, go through a private vendor. I mean, to lay down cable from a high-speed place to some place where they could transfer the data could be very expensive.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just
making a disk over and sending it.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't get lost in Nigeria.
Yeah, well, they were copies, right? It wasn't like...
I'm sure the FedEx bill's, you know, not cheap either, so...
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, DHL, all those are awful.
So, I mean,
customs are the pits and all of those.
You check into her looking into the availability of high speed somewhere in Cape Town.
Yeah. Okay, I'll work on that.
That would be great.
Just a thought. We've got people who go to South Africa every now and then, so.
Well, right.
Maybe bring them back.
But we don't want to be in a situation where they've collected 20 scans and then we found out they did it wrong.
Yeah, I'm just saying an interim step. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, they did do pilot scanning, and you know, when Catherine was there, and we brought the data back and analyzed it. So, in theory, it can be done, and hopefully, the data is good.
Right. So, you know, I'm just offering that as a suggestion that, you know, somewhere in that city there must be some.
Yeah.
And it's probably not any more expensive to try to arrange to use it than it is to send it by DHL.
Yeah.
And so that's all I'm suggesting, if someone try to look into that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. Yeah, because they haven't entered any data as being collected, so...
Right. Well, we're supposed to enter the imaging data, and I assume Sarah's group is supposed to enter the neurobehavioral, but the only reason we didn't enter it is because they didn't give us information on what groups these seven kids fall into.
Oh, I just updated it, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I updated it right when you emailed me the list.
Okay.
So they have five exposed and two controls.
Okay, so now it's in there. Thanks, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we're...
117 on the neuropsych battery.
Cool.
Yeah, so they're ramped up and hopefully they're going there. And they'll get above the line soon, hopefully. And let's see, the camera is going to South Africa in September. And I'll have to talk to Tatiana about... whether it can stay or not, and
I'll send Colleen an email about that. Can I make a plea too? Given what was just said about five exposed and two non,
mm-hmm.
All of these South African kids that are being imaged, and I think it's up to 110 or 120. All of them are full blown FAS or PFAS, and If you can somehow treat them that way rather than just plain exposed, I think you'll have a lot more meaningful analysis.
Mm. Yeah, I guess in her spreadsheet there's four that are FAS with confirmation and then one with partial FAS. So.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm telling you is every one of the 120 kids that, quote, is exposed in South Africa has a formal diagnosis of FAS or PFAS. And it's four FAS to one PFAS. So you've got 90 or more already diagnosed, gold standard, full-blown FAS. So what I'm saying is that to lump them in the category of just exposed is probably not the best use of these cases.
Right, right. I appreciate that. It's not clear yet how we're going to do... Because, I mean, according to the database from like, what, Ken, from Dysmorphology, it's you know, deferred FAS or unexposed, right?
Right.
So it's kind of hard at this point to know exactly what to do with them, groupings. I mean, honestly, we haven't tried yet. We're
well,
in the process of...
Yes, but I'm telling you, they all go in that first category of FAS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we care a lot about that. That'll be a good thing.
Don't want to put them in the same category with the deferreds, because the deferreds are a whole different animal, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we were talking about the Google Docs spreadsheet that I updated, and for that there's, you know, there's FASD and there's control. So I've put the FAS and PFAS into the FASD category for now.
Right, but they may well be different than the FASD that you're getting from other sites, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're more severely affected.
Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to report that the BBC is reporting that the cable linking South Africa to the UK, anyway, has, which was delayed, it was supposed to be set up in June, but was delayed by the Somali pirates, is now up and functioning.
It's hard to conduct science in this environment, isn't it?
So that's according to the BBC, and so they are getting high-speed internet throughout South Africa as we speak.
Good.
This is Andy. I want to throw out something related to Phil's comment about the exposed versus clinical diagnosis of FAS. You know, I'm a layperson here when it comes to some of these things, so I may have things wrong here, but my understanding is that we don't actually have any variable being collected anywhere that represents a clinical diagnosis of FAS in terms of what's coming to the central repository. Even what's coming out of the dysmorphology core, something not quite a clinical diagnosis.
Well, you should have the clinical diagnosis of the FAS kid, not so, and the way we diagnose them, most of the PFAS land in that category too. But the deferred one is the one that's going to screw you up. The deferred category is, there's just a huge, huge variance of kids who are exposed, but they range in everything from substantial dysmorphology, where you would expect substantial dysmorphology in the brains, to kids that have just, you know, one or two drinks per week at most, who have no dysmorphology, and the brain should be quite normal. So it's that deferred category that's going to really screw you up.
Well, we don't accept kids with one or two drinks per week, do we? It's four or more on any one occasion.
Well, but I'm talking about dysmorphology. I don't know what the actual exposure data are going to look like with those cases, but I do know in the dysmorphology data set there are just dozens and dozens of deferred kids who are from very, very mildly exposed, let's just say it that way, to those who are really substantially exposed and have substantial dysmorphology.
Well, every time we have looked at the brain in kids with and without the face, we've seen dysmorphology that's somewhere between unexposed and full-blown FAS. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot more variability in that deferred group. And I agree that, you know, once we have a substantial amount of data to look at the brain, it behooves us to see how those kids fall out, but not, you know, wash out the effect of FAS by including all those kids with less severe. But, I mean, I think this is going to be an issue for every component, the face, the neural behavior, the brain.
Right, and that's the point I was making. Don't lump them all. Could wash it out. That's the only point I'm making. So that's
yeah. All right. So, but Andy, I mean, it's that clinical diagnosis can be made from the data that's in the dysmorphology database.
Plus the cognitive data.
Right. I mean, if you're looking for the CNS problem and you add that in, you can make that diagnosis without a problem.
Well, and the trick is, though, Ed, if they're not our kids, I don't, or the Finland kids, the trick is tying the alcohol information to the dysmorphology, because you I would guess that at some sites you have data sets where those have never been combined for the formal diagnosis.
Right, but for the formal diagnosis of FAS, you don't need an alcohol history. I mean, you can make a clinical diagnosis of FAS without an alcohol history just based upon facial dysmorphology and CNS problems.
I don't disagree with you, but many people outside the consortium who would.
No, I think that, I mean, we're just citing from your paper, so.
I know, but I guarantee you, I take hits on that all the time.
So just from, you know, Andy's question, you know, I think that we can. What we wanted to do was to see whether or not there was this dysmorphology. I mean, didn't want it to be circular. So we're looking at kids who have the dysmorphology and then going back and looking at their alcohol exposure histories if those are available.
Yeah.
And then the deferred category was for those kids that we weren't really quite sure about. And once we know what maybe a behavioral profile looks like, then maybe we can start to, or what brain look like in those non-dysmorphic, those questionable question mark kids, is then we can go back and say, you know what, these are kids that look like they were alcohol exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I think the clinical diagnosis can be obtained from the data that's already that we already have. Is my answering your question, Andy, or no?
I think so. I think you've explained what I thought was the case, was that the clinical diagnosis may not be directly being recorded anywhere, but the data that we're recording can be used to come up with a clinical diagnosis sort of dynamically.
Right, and we just didn't want it to be circular. We wanted to be able to go back and look at alcohol exposure histories and then look at the dysmorphology, to look at the dysmorphology and then go back and look at the alcohol exposure histories. And, you know, otherwise, if you're only saying the kids who are of FAS have all these facial features and alcohol exposure histories, you know, you're not going to get a true impact of the effect of prenatal alcohol exposure.
But the qualification of that is, Ed, that our kids who are in the FAS category that we are sending to Elizabeth, for example, have all had all that combined in a case conference.
Right.
The diagnosis was made with all the domains, so you don't really, if you treat them as a subset of the entire CIFASD population. They are already combined at the time of case conference final diagnosis.
Right. But what's going to be interesting then is to compare those kids that we know you have this clean diagnosis.
But the hard part about that is if we don't have any of the kids from South Africa that are not dysmorphic, you know, we have to worry a little bit about scanner effects.
Say that again.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You mean exposed but not dysmorphic?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Site effects of the site and how that might influence the quality of the images.
Well not so much the quality of the images, but...
Or you know, there might be some regional site.
In one magnet and all you're exposed in another, you can never be quite sure.
Well,
so I think it'll be important to keep that in mind, that when we're pooling data with South Africa, we have to make sure that we're not... that we're pooling only kids who are comparable in diagnosis from the other site.
No, you're not.
Right.
There's one control. There should be one control for every single South African kid with an FAS diagnosis.
Right, but I'm saying in all the other sites, we have kids with the face and without, but with significant alcohol histories.
Right.
We can go back, and I can tell you that about a quarter of the kids in the control group in South Africa have substantial exposure.
Okay, well, that's really critical for everybody.
But we have that information.
Oh, we have all that information?
Yeah, good.
So it's a matter of picking and choosing of who you're going to compare.
I mean, right.
I think eventually what's going to happen is that we're going to just probably regress dysmorphology scores.
That's my feeling.
Against brain or behavior.
Yeah, what I think.
You know, and forget this dichotomy of FAS,
yeah.
PFAS, and FASD, and, you know, use it as a continuous variable as dysmorphology. and see what.
Yeah, that'll be more.
So.
That will be much better in terms of research.
Yeah. Well, has Ken agreed to that?
Well, not yet. I'll just use the word regress, and Ken will go, okay.
Well, I mean, that's what we do, and Ken's part of generating our data, and he appreciates it once we do it, but it's in these meetings, sometimes he objects to it, and I don't know.
I'm not saying anything from the clinical realm, but I think from the research realm.
It's a different issue.
No, I understand, but he's always wanted to protect that deferred group.
and I think that's an important. Eventually, that's where we're going to take all the data that we learn from FAS versus controls. And I mean, Sarah's done it with that paper with the profile analysis. She got the profile from studying FAS kids, and then applied it to those deferred kids.
Right.
And you know, sure enough, it's pretty good in predicting. Well, not great, but 70% of them.
Oh, some of them are over 0.8.
Yeah. So. You know, and I think that's a reasonable model to look at than looking at all the other variables that we have.
We won't dispute that.
Yeah. So
are there enough unexposed kids in the South Africa group?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they got so many kids that they have exposed non-dysmorphic.
Yeah.
Without any CNN, without any behavior problems, who are getting shoved into the control group.
And we have 2.5 controls for every case, and only about a quarter of those randomly selected controls are substantially exposed. The other, the rest of them are quite clean. And we've shown in 2 or 3 papers looking at, more than that, probably 3 or 4 papers in a number of populations where the randomly selected controls that are exposed versus the ones who are not exposed. There really is no difference anyway on those tests. Now, brain imaging may be another story.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think
we'll
the South African population, because of the other variables that they differ on from the kids in San Diego or, you know, Los Angeles, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not body mass index and things like that hold up, you know, whether that influences, whether it's the nutritional aspects of it or what. Act synergistically. So I think there's going to be a lot that we can ask by looking at similarities and differences across the different sites. So, all right, is there any progress that people want to mention that they've made? Or?
I'm on vacation, so if I could just briefly mention two things and probably leave you. One is that the genetics IRB information is working its way through Emory, and we hope in the next couple of weeks to have that approved. And we hope to do that because we have Ken coming back on the 28th and 29th of August to do another 20-some kids.
You're making good work there, good progress in Atlanta now. You and I will talk when you get back from vacation.
Right, good.
Some of the things that you needed done.
Thank you. Good. I'll call you next week.
I think I've got done, although it may not happen until after October 1.
Okay, good. I need to know about it, so I'll call you when I get back.
All right. Now enjoy the heat.
No, I'm not. I'm in Seattle.
No, it's very hot there.
No, it's not. It's about 65.
You're kidding.
It got cool. Yeah, last week it was.
All right. Well,
talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Claire.
Anyone else have any interesting progress or things that they need to tell us about? Okay, then. Leah, when's Tatiana coming back?
This weekend.
Maybe we could talk next week.
Okay.
Try to figure out this. Where the cameras are going and where they can stay and not stay and things like that.
I'll copy you on this email to Colleen, Ed.
All right, Bill. And then you and I will have to have a discussion, too. So, again, about good things, not bad things.
Okay.
All right, but we'll talk in wherever we're going, Alberta or Edmonton or whatever.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll be in. Let's see. I'll be in South Africa prior to that. I'll be in South Africa 3 weeks in September.
I'll be in Poland. So.
All right. That's right.
All right. All right. Well, thank Dale. Any comments from NIAAA? Now that Francis Collin has been appointed?
That's right. He was confirmed today, I believe.
Yeah. Confirmed today. So, although I heard some silly rumor that they're talking about reducing the NIH budget 2 years down the road because of all the stimulus money that went in.
I hadn't heard that.
Hopefully just a silly rumor.
I hope so, yeah.
Well, I guess.
And
because there should be a lot of applications coming in about then.
Oh, it's going to be tons of applications coming in starting in February. It's going to be amazing.
That's right.
All righty. Well, thank you all. And keep up the good work. Keep those blue lines above the red lines. And I'll be happy.